fuck. It's a Wednesday. New episode of Wisteria Gaze, and we're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls, just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store. Fuck. It's an ad for Overcast.
It's an episode of Wisteria Gaze.
Are we going right into it?
Yeah, you fucking know we are.
Oh, fuck. It's a new episode of Wisteria Gaze. Fuck, it's an episode of a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Desperate Housewives, one at a time.
One at a time.
And we're gay.
We're so fucking gay.
Do you know, I think the first time we mentioned the iconic Cock Destroyers, I think was like episode 2 of our podcast.
I believe that,
I'm like 90% sure the first time we brought them up was episode 2 of season 1.
I mean, the fact that we get wet and wild every single episode, I don't doubt that we brought up the famed Cock Destroyers episode 2, baby.
You saying wet and wild made me think of the video where Sophie pours milk on herself. And now I'm just upset.
It's a wet Friday.
It's a wet Friday. Hi, Ned. How are you?
I'm neato. How are you doing, Mackenzie?
Oh, pretty good. What a sly way to say our names, but also be casual about it.
Yeah, because we're Supes Cash.
We're Supes Cash. Sorry, sometimes I just think about how I think I have the most fun of my entire life doing this podcast with you.
Same.
I love you so much.
I love you too. And this has been the episode.
This is the episode. Goodbye. And I love all of you listening right now because you're here to hear us talk about a TV show, not about ourselves or the Cock Destroyers. That's a new podcast we're starting, mm-hmm. Where it's a Cock Destroyers review podcast. But this is a Desperate Housewives review podcast, and this week we're talking about season 3, episode 5, entitled Nice She Ain't.
Nice She Ain't. When did this premiere?
Oh, I'll tell you. It premiered, sorry, we're Supes Cash today. It premiered October 22nd, 2006, and was written by Alexandra Cunningham and a new writer, Susan Neera Jaffe, no relation to Sherry Jaffe, the character from The L Word.
Dang.
Little info on Susan. Before Desperate Housewives, she was an episode writer and story editor for Sybil, as well as an executive story editor for Sex and the City.
Oh.
And she arrived at DH around season 3 and then went on to become an executive producer for the rest of the series. And then I could not find anything she did in between Desperate Housewives and her newest gig, which is being the consulting producer for Raven's Home.
Oh.
So she just had like a long break and then now is on the That's So Raven spinoff, I guess, as a consulting producer.
I didn't know that show was still on.
Is it? I have no clue.
I have no clue.
They didn't make Raven and Chelsea gay, which feels like a huge letdown.
They didn't make them gay, but they did make them co-parents.
Exactly. It's like, what? That don't make no sense.
Mm-mm.
And also, it was directed by a new director. New blood all around. David Warren. I looked him up. He apparently is predominantly a theater director. And then Mark Cherry is his friend. And so he was like, would you do this, please? So this was one of his early television directing gigs because he was mostly a theater director at the time. But he then went on after beginning his TV career kind of with this episode. And he ended up directing more episodes throughout the series. But he dabbled in some other series such as Gossip Girl, Weeds, Ugly Betty, Grace and Frankie, as well as Mark Cherry's Desperate Housewives follow-ups, Devious Maids and Women Who Kill. So,
oh, wow.
This was one of his earliest gigs, and now he's vibing.
Hell yeah.
And you know something funny?
What?
I went on a Wikipedia journey from David Warren. He's gay. He's a homosexual. And he is married to his partner of 24 years, which is so sweet. And his partner is Peter Frechette, or Frechette. And you may not know him by name, because I didn't. But he's a Tony and Emmy-nominated actor. And he's been in a bunch of stuff. But what I know him from is, have you seen Grease 2?
Yes, I watched it with you.
Oh my God. We did watch it together. He's the guy who sings the patriotic song to get laid.
Oh,
but
my
like,
God.
Let's do it for our country, the red, white, and blue. That's this guy's husband.
Oh, my God.
So I just wanted to bring that up. So it makes a song about patriotic coercion a little better for me, knowing he was gay the whole time. And that's the vibe. For Sondheim Watch, Nice She Ain't is a cut song from the Jules Stein musical Gypsy, which Sondheim did the lyrics to, apparently.
Oh.
And in Wisteria International, most other countries, this was called The Art of Sabotage, which makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And in Croatia, which I loved, it's called She Isn't Nice. That's what this episode was called. And I liked it because correct grammar. We love to see it.
Yeah.
Okay?
And also, it does fit.
It does.
She isn't nice.
She isn't nice.
You can place that upon many characters.
And nice she ain't makes my brain scramble. She isn't nice. That's called proper grammar, baby. Croatia came through with that red pin and they went, nah, this isn't right. And I respect that from Croatia.
Oh, so do I.
And that's all I got. That's all I got for you. Top of episode.
So are we ready to dive in?
I am. I just spilled my water on myself. I'm soaked. I'm wet. I'm wild. I'm ready to dive in.
Oh, so you're pre-wet.
I'm pre-wet. When I dive into a pool, sometimes I like to get pre-wet so that it's not.
Okay. You slip and slide into that water.
I slip
easier.
And slide right in, and it doesn't shock my body as much, you know?
That's fair.
I've got to prep.
The art of sabotage is practiced every day in the suburbs.
Apparently.
Apparently in different ways, you know, you can cut the cables of your satellite TV when your husband wants to watch the game with the boys. I'm not one for Sundays with the boys.
You know what, Ned?
Sundays for God. What?
Yes, one. But two, she isn't nice.
She isn't nice!
She isn't nice, this woman!
We also hear Mary Alice say, in suburbia, everyone is a potential saboteur. We see Bree at a motel looking for Filati.
I didn't know who that was at first.
I just assume. I actually didn't either. I was like, why is Bree here?
I was really confused.
We quickly find out that Filati is Danielle's history teacher, and him and Danielle are at the motel right now.
My God.
And Bree's there to break it up.
I loved Gus, the guy who owns the motel. I thought that guy was just funny. Like, I thought his performance was so funny. And I choked on my drink when he was like, they're in room 17. Ironic, right? Because of Danielle being 17. I choked on my water when I was watching this.
I loved her rapport with him as well.
I did. Yes. Her, like, it's skipping a bit ahead, but her, when he mentions, like, don't shoot anybody, I just redid the carpets. And then, like, a couple minutes later, her going, Gus, the carpets are beautiful. Like, it was just a funny, they were funny as hell together. Marcia Cross is so funny.
I feel like they just don't let her
do
comedy as much as, like, she can do it.
And she's
but
so
it
funny.
Does make those moments when she is being funny very good because we don't get to see that as often.
I thought she was so funny. Like a couple of times in this episode, I thought she was very funny. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Marcia Cross. But basically, she goes into this room and breaks them up, and we don't really see it. We just kind of hear the hubbub from behind the door while Gus listens. And I was trying to piece together what was being said. I don't know if you heard anything. I heard Filati go, what makes you think? And then that's all. And then you kind of hear him say, when she opens the door again, I told her it was over. And then Danielle's like, oh, like audibly weeping. I was like, what? I hate this whole scenario.
Me as well.
Can this show go one season without statutory interactions happening between people?
We're finding out that no.
The answer is absolutely not.
Did that happen in season two? Yes, it did.
Well, John Tucker is kind of always...
Well, also Andrew.
Oh my God, Andrew and Peter. Jesus Christ. Okay, so we have yet to have a season without a deeply illegal relationship between an adult and a minor.
Here's hoping for season four.
Fingers crossed.
Let's break this chain.
But that's basically that scene.
Yeah, because then we go into the full opening credits.
Oof. Hulu tried to give me the option to skip, and I said no thank you.
Can I be honest with you?
Did you skip it?
I did. This is the only time I've ever skipped, and it's the only time I will ever skip.
Ned Mike Delfino Parker, I can't believe you.
I'm sorry.
Ugh, your bones are not crunched. Your cheeks are not clapping.
My bones are rubber. They're just rubber. I'm just flat out on the ground.
Ugh.
I'm recording from the ground as well.
I can't believe the podcast is over now because you skipped the opening credits.
I can.
It was always meant to happen this way.
The downfall of Wisteria Gaze.
I'm that picture of that guy that people share on Twitter of the man holding the gun and weeping. That's me now killing the podcast. Yeah.
You know what?
Tell me.
Family dinners used to mean something. Ugh. They used to mean something back in the day.
Back in my day, yeah.
But nobody sits down for meals anymore, except for the Hodges.
Oh.
Every time I say it.
Yeah, same.
Everyone's sitting down to have dinner. Danielle is there. She does not want to be. And, you know, Andrew starts kind of snipping at her a bit.
He got some good jabs in.
Andrew's had a couple good jabs this episode.
He's a quip king.
He is. And Danielle is getting progressively more upset because Brie is also kind of just ignoring this and just kind of like not caring about Danielle and like anything she says.
They all truly just don't give a shit about her. Mm-mm. Like truly they're just like so disinterested in her tantrum that she's throwing. I did find it funny at this point. Not as much later, but at this point I was like, this is funny. Because it does feel like one of those moments when the show acknowledges that Danielle is kind of like the second favorite child after Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Orson's delivery in this scene. He had a lot of lines that were just funny the way he said them to me. Like when she says something like, he's married or he's getting a divorce. And Orson goes, well, that hardly bolsters his suitability. Like he's just like moments like that. I'm like, oh, it makes sense that you and Brie are together. You know what I mean? Like the like way he talks is so Brie-like. It's just very funny to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I forgot. Danielle throws a plate at the wall.
Yes. Let the bodies hit the floor, you know?
But I mean, like that is essentially what goes on in that scene.
Yeah, I think she storms upstairs, maybe.
Yeah, she throws a plate against the wall, and Brie mentions needing paper plates.
Ugh.
And then Danielle goes upstairs. And then we cut to Tom making some pizza.
Pizza pie.
And he seems very happy. He's making some pizza. He has a pizza already prepared for Lynette when she gets home. He gives her a slice, and he's like, you know, you are the best wife in the whole world because nobody else would sit with their husband this long while he figures out what he's passionate about. And what I'm passionate about is I want to have a pizza parlor. I love this for him, actually. I'll say it. I do.
Didn't you have a prediction that was similar to this?
I said that Lynette was going to, like, work in a restaurant.
Okay. I knew that there was something restaurant-themed with the Scavos in one of your predictions, and I couldn't remember if it was Tom or not.
Yeah, maybe I said Tom was going to start a business. I don't know.
I think you might have at one point. Listeners, confirm or deny for me if Ned said that. I don't remember, but they might have.
Yeah.
I also think this is endearing. I have more thoughts on it later, I think. But I also think that he seems really happy. And I like that for him.
You know, because marinara is in his blood.
Is he Italian?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. The most, like, Aryan-looking Italian person I've ever seen in my life. The blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah, and this scene is Lynette kind of not being super into the idea. No. She wants to open up more wine. She wants to get drunk.
Get toasted.
Yeah, and, you know, Tom's just like, I want it to be, like, a family place. I want it's sweet. To... Yeah.
Big portion, small prices. He yeah. wants to open Buca di Beppo, basically.
Oh, I was going to say an Olive Garden.
Oh, an Olive, where you, when you hear your family.
Yeah.
Yeah, Buca di Beppo I went to once, and I'm an only child, so I don't like sharing food. And the way Buca di Beppo works is you order, like, plates for four people. And oh. so I remember going and being like, I just want my own plate of spaghetti. I don't want a lasagna for six. I was deeply upset, but that's what it sounds like Tom wants.
I love that.
We go to Buca di Beppo together. We eat please, a giant I've lasagna. Never been. It was yummy last time I remember. Okay. I also think the name is very funny.
So do
Buca
I.
Buca di Beppo.
We then cut to Carlos and Gabby. Carlos is wearing like a robe. There's strawberries and cream everywhere. And yeah. Gabby's like, oh, you really thought you could seduce me with all of this? Because listen, buddy. That's not happening.
And little does Gabby know that it's not to seduce her. It's to seduce Trishelle.
Trishelle.
Who it looks like an 18-year-old blonde woman who is in this bathtub with Carla, or in the bathtub waiting for Carlos, I suppose. And that's why was Carlos using Gabby's bedroom to fuck another woman?
Because he wants to, like, get in her face and, like, get her upset about it.
I hate him.
Oh, yeah.
I hate him so much.
It's shitty.
Yeah, I don't know if I've mentioned that. I don't know if I've mentioned that I don't like Carlos. Have I said that enough on this podcast?
I don't know if I ever heard you say that.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll say it for good measure. Okay. I don't like Carlos.
Oh, okay. Okay, so going forward, don't
everyone
like
should
it.
Know. Everyone should know I don't like Carlos.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay.
I would like him to suck my ass.
So I can give him a straw.
Please give him a straw to suck my ass with.
Okay, thank God.
Official merch, we start selling straws.
Yes. just, with like, our faces on them.
With our faces on them, yeah. We just ummed in unison.
Oh my God.
I'm turned on. So
I've been turned on.
We then cut to Mikey Poo eating some chicken nude soup, baby. And he's looking very suspiciously at Susan. I understand that he's waking up from a coma, but the actor that plays Mike has no life in his eyes in any capacity in any scene he's in anymore. And it's so funny because he used to have life in his eyes. And now it is it's just a barren wasteland.
It's like they told him, yeah, just kind of be confused all the time.
Just like, don't give a fuck about anything. Yeah. Give me no, go on, girl, give me nothing. That's my directing note.
Just squint a little bit and you got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And they go, fuck, perfect, perfect. But Susan's trying to jog his memory.
That's how we got our song.
Car wash.
Yes, see how much fun we were. So I dragged you out onto the dance floor. And, well, you were giving me this look. Sort of like the look you're giving me right now. And I started to do this. And then you did this.
I'm sorry. This isn't working.
Oh, Mike. Come on. You're not even trying to remember. It was fun. Oh, I know. Okay. Sing with me. Car wash. Talking about the car wash. Woo! Car wash. Yeah.
Though Mike is disinterested, I want to see this flashback.
I agree. I was just thinking that. I want to see Mike doing those dance moves
I
that Susan
was showcasing.
I want to see
Mike doing them dance moves. I would pay money to see that flashback. I would love to see that.
Because in my mind flashback, we're seeing it how Susan remembers it. So it's like fully choreographed.
Yes.
And like they're wearing little matching outfits.
Oh my God. I would love to see that. I would like to see it.
Yes, season
Please?
8.
Season 8, I would like to see it. And Mike is just not into it. Mike is just like, will you please leave me alone? And Susan says, I'm not going to give up on you. as she always does. And this scene's fine. I'm not crazy about what happens with Susan later, but that's later.
For now, we have to cut to a precinct, and we have a detective coming up to Detective Ridley, who we've seen before and talked about.
Yes.
We find out that the Jane Doe from the previous episode had ink on her hands. And
yes.
The detective thinks it might be a phone number.
Dun, dun, dun. And that's all we get.
Yes.
Because then we go to the Hodge house.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do a little content warning in this part of the episode. There a content warning for suicide and suicide attempts and cutting in this section. It's not too much, but it's visually seen in this next part of the episode if you haven't watched it yet. And then it's talked about throughout the episode a couple more times. Because we're back at the Hodges. Bree sends Andrew up to check on Danielle. And I will not lie, I was jarred by this moment because the captioning said Danielle moaning.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, what's happening? Is the teacher here? Is like, I thought that it was like a sexual thing. So I was deeply thrown off when Andrew enters the bathroom and sees that Danielle has a small cut on her wrist and is kind of staging herself in the bathroom to be, I guess, seen by Andrew or Bree or Orson.
Yeah, there's this moment where Andrew looks at her and she has her eyes open and then she closes them really quick.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, somebody's here now.
I felt her kind of acting it, but I didn't see that moment. That's something that seems important to look at.
Yes.
Also, what is the blue powder? She like dropped some blue powder on the ground?
I have no idea. I was wondering the same thing.
I was like, is that drugs? It didn't look like drugs. It just looked like Epsom salt, maybe. Like
yeah.
You put in a bath for your feet. Like, I just truly couldn't tell what that was.
Maybe she broke something so it could be heard. I mean,
that's probably it.
Yeah. So Andrew goes downstairs and tries to tell Bree, and there's this like comedy moment.
I'm telling you, it was a deliberate snub. I waved to her and she looked right through me. True, I never bought her eldest daughter a gift. Andrew, please don't interrupt me while I'm speaking. True, I never bought her eldest daughter a gift, but you know my policy. No husband, no baby gift. Now, what is it, dear?
Danielle's upstairs trying to commit suicide. No rush. She's not trying that hard.
They race. And then we cut to Andrew playing a Game Boy SP, and I'm so fucking jealous because I want an SP so bad.
I still have mine from when I was a kid.
I'm jelly.
I remember I went to Toys R Us. I had $100 for my birthday somehow. And I was saving just so I could buy one of these. And I bought a Game Boy Advance SP along with Shrek 2.
Oh,
hell yeah.
I want an SP so bad so that I can play the old Pokemon games. And
yes.
Also Legacy of Goku 2, which is my favorite Game Boy game.
I recently rebought Sims 2 for Game Boy because the
Ooh.
Sims games are great. You have little quests.
Sims it's... busting out on Game Boy Advance?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking slaps.
With your little moped?
Yes. Oh my god, I have to buy a Game Boy SP more than anything in the world. I'm hoping Rachel gets it for me for Hanukkah, but I can't be sure.
back to the show.
Yeah, that's not important because Bree is pretty upset. She's really upset that this happened to Danielle, and she is confused why Andrew isn't upset. And he says something, and like I hate to say it so like bluntly, this is how Andrew says it. He says she tried to like kill herself with a spoon.
Yeah, he says, quote, she tried to slit her wrist with a spoon.
Was it, well, there was a razor next to her. Was
yeah.
he just saying the razor's dull, or was it actually a spoon?
He's saying that because, so we find out that the wounds that Danielle inflicted were primarily superficial.
Yes.
And so they weren't like deep or anything. And I think Andrew's just being like, because he also says that she's doing this for attention.
Yes.
So I think he's just being like, yeah, she tried to do it with a spoon. She wasn't actually trying to like do anything. I think that's what he was trying to say.
Okay. I couldn't tell if he actually meant that because I was like, what? And I don't like the phrase doing it for attention, though. I think that, like, even if it is quote unquote for attention, it is still a cry for help. It is still some sort of need to be seen in a way that you're not. And I think that even though Danielle annoys me, she is not really being seen or heard by her family. And like,
no.
So like, yeah. So I don't super 100p agree with the way Andrew puts it, but I also agree she wasn't actually trying to die from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Based on the vibes I got from Danielle, but I may be wrong.
No, I personally agree with you. I don't think you're wrong. Yeah.
And Andrew makes one too many quips and Orson kind of snaps at him.
Mm-hmm.
Orson is, we were seeing him get upset throughout the scene, but he kind of explodes on Andrew here, saying that suicide is the worst thing that can happen to a family and he won't have it made light of. And I think that the show was trying to position this as a red flag of like, oh, he's angry. But it looked like Orson just got very triggered by the situation and rattled. Like, I wasn't confused by, like, they kind of made Andrew give this kind of scared look, which I understand being scared if someone like Orson kind of snaps. But like, it felt like the show was trying to once again do the, ooh, isn't he scary kind of thing. When I feel like I just saw a person who was triggered.
Yeah.
In that moment. And now I'm like, what's going on with Orson? Clearly something has happened in his family that relates to this, because that wouldn't have just, that kind of anger would not have just come out of nowhere, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In this scene, we also find out from the doctor that they will have to go into counseling.
Yes.
Because it is just mandatory for a situation like this.
Yeah.
We then cut to Nora.
She's dropping some eaves.
She's dropping some eaves. Looking out that little windy. And Lynette is just having a small gathering of some random friends. Like, Klusky's there. Gabby's there. Yeah. Who else is there? Is Edie? No, Edie's
Susan.
Not there.
Susan, Gabby, and McCluskey.
What a pairing. What a group.
Oh, I hope they start bringing McCluskey back into the group. Because her and Lynette had that friendship in season one, and I want to see it return. I want to see the return of McCluskey.
And they're all talking about the pizza parlor, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Lynette is, like, trying to be supportive a little bit, right?
Yeah, but the other ladies are kind of insinuating that it's not a good idea.
Yeah, Klusky literally says that men are incapable of knowing their dream, or knowing that their dreams are stupid.
Lesbian the episode nominee.
Oh, yes.
I wrote down from McCluskey thinking that men's dreams are stupid.
Yes. Lesbian of the episode nominee, Klusky.
Klusky, get in that bucket, babe.
Get in the bucket.
Get in the fucking bucket.
And then we have Nora, like, come out of the house and pretend like she hasn't heard anything and asks to speak to Lynette for a second. And she flat out tells Annette, like, hey, this is a sucky idea. You gotta stomp on it while you still can.
Yes.
I was sketchy. I thought this was sketchy, you know?
I mean, you get a little bit of confirmation at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. I would say. I mean, Nora kind of plays that we're both the mother of his children card by being like, yeah, you know, if he fails, then we're going to have to do things we don't want to do. Once again, shaming sex workers as the show loves to do, but kind of the idea being like, when he fails, we're going to be the ones having to, I don't know, suffer from it. I have no clue.
I was also like, that's an interesting point, Nora, that you're trying to make when Lynette has a job.
Yeah.
Like, as far as we know, Nora, you don't have a job. The show hasn't told us that you do. So
the show has not told us that Nora has a job. No.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think, I can't remember if it's, yeah, it's later Lynette mentions that this is mostly going to be coming out of their life savings. And so I think Lynette is just nervous about losing that amount of money. Like, they'd probably still be okay, but like, I don't know. I feel like the show tries to give us the impression that the Scavos are really tight on money. And especially with him having a lull in his employment.
Yeah, especially since they had to sell the boat.
They had to sell that boat. Who knows? I cannot get a grasp on what the Scavos' money situation is.
And after that, we cut to Julie.
Queen Julie.
And her friend Sarah. And I screamed. Yes. I screamed because I went, I know who this is. Yes, this is Mae Whitman.
I love her.
I love Mae Whitman. For those of you who don't know, Mae Whitman was Egg in Arrested Development.
Yes.
Katara in Avatar The Last Airbender. She was in Good Girls, right?
Yeah. Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim.
Parenthood. She was in that forever. Also, as of yesterday for our recording, she came out as pansexual.
Yes! Congratulations, Mae Whitman!
Congrats, Mae Whitman! Welcome to the queer community! You've been hanging out with Aubrey Plaza enough, so we kind of knew, but, you know, it's nice to hear. I feel like there's actresses where it's like, if you see them hanging out with them, like if someone's with Cara Delevingne or Aubrey Plaza or Carrie Brownstein, I'm like, yeah, you're probably gay in some capacity. Pansexual, the episode, Mae Whitman, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats.
Hell yeah, congrats!
She's great. I wish she had more. I hope she comes back. I love her.
I so hope she comes back. We see that. So Julie and Sarah, they're hanging out. Austin comes up to them. And Sarah definitely is into him.
Sarah is horned up immediately.
Mm-hmm. We find out that Austin is here, though, to ask Julie for help because he's having some trouble in school and... he needs help.
He brought flowers with a wild amount of roots attached to them.
Yes.
He's like, is he a himbo? I'm just confused because he's like, just be like, yes, I will grab these from the ground and bring them over to you. It was just so much.
Julie is reluctant, but she agrees to do it for $15 an hour.
Minimum wage, girl.
Yeah. Hell
Let's get it.
We then cut to Susan coming to the hospital. She has her famous mac and cheese to try to trigger his memory somehow. The nurse kind of is like, the nurse is being really weird to Susan. Like, I think it's wild that she does not remember her when she has been here every day for the past 6 months.
Well, Susan makes a comment that Marcy or Macy or there's like another nurse that she knows because Susan's like, where's Marcy? And the new nurse is like, oh, she's, you know, she's on vacation or whatever. Who are you? So I think that there's maybe like my impression to make this work in the world of this show is that maybe this nurse was on a different shift. And so Edie was seeing her a lot, maybe because Edie was there more often than Susan was. But that Susan was only going for Marcy's shift, let's say. And now Marcy's on vacation. So this new nurse switched. And this is the first time that Susan is seeing her.
Okay, that would make sense.
That's too much to explain. But there is like a weird little comment. And that's the only thing I can assume based on it.
Yeah,
I have no clue.
But we find out that... Rather, Susan finds out that Edie has been coming here every day since Mike woke up, and Susan, her little brain wire starts
Detective
sparking.
Detective Suze.
And she kind of realizes, she puts it together that she is probably feeding Mike a lot of really false, like, information. And she calls her out on it.
Yeah, I mean, the nurse calls Edie Mike's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Because she says, I don't know who you are, but I know his girlfriend.
I did wrote Lote for this nurse and Edie because there was a part where she goes, she's like, I know his girlfriend, Miss Britt. And it was just this weird loving look they shared. And I was like, they're girlfriends and Mike's their third. And so I wrote Lote for the nurse and Edie.
Hey, let's do it. Let's do it.
Get him in the bucket.
Get him in that bucket.
Susan is forcibly removed from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Which is intense.
Yeah, there's a lot of intense things that are happening in a row. Because after this scene, we cut to family therapy where they say the R word.
Just right off the bat.
They just right off the bat start a scene by saying that word.
I mean, God, that word really was like popular colloquialism in the early aughts, which is... wild to think about to me when I do think that, but like I, because I have, you know, I think a lot of us were guilty of using that word in the early aughts when, you know, at least for me when I was a teen, and that has effectively been erased from my vocabulary and I never hear it anymore. Mm-hmm. So when I do, it is like a punch in the face. I was so shocked by it, weirdly. Yeah. It kind of threw me off for the rest of the scene.
Yeah. This scene is wild too.
This scene's fucking wild.
The therapist is pretty accurate, though, because, like,
he's good.
They start fighting, and the therapist says, well, I think there's two different issues going on here. I think that, Bree, you genuinely you genuinely think you're doing what's best for your daughter, and she's not understanding it. And Danielle, you feel that your mother cares more about her own image than she does about you. That's right on the money.
He's a good therapist.
Yes.
But where's Dr. Goldfein?
I don't know.
Something I gotta ask. Because he survived, right? Yeah, so bring back Dr. Goldfein challenge.
Bree got a new relationship, so she doesn't need therapy anymore.
You're right. Therapy is fake, after all.
Danielle feeling powerful.
I can't believe I said just an episode or two ago I wanted to be a Danielle stan.
You were like, at the end of the season, I swear to God, we're going to be Danielle stans. And I was with fool. You.
I was young. I was younger then.
Hey, I 2 weeks just ago. As young. You know, 2 weeks
she
ago.
She calls Andrew that.
Yeah.
She calls him, if that can survive, bitch, I'll meet my blade, Danielle. Don't call a human being a that. I'm going to kick Danielle's ass.
Danielle, yes, I'll join you. I don't
give a crap. Joy Lauren, come on our podcast. She listens and goes, oh, my performance in 305 was so good. I'll listen to this episode. And then Joy Lauren just hears us going, I want to kick Danielle's ass.
And then Joy Lauren goes, I have to sue them for defamation.
Joy Lauren, you are great. Please don't sue us. Danielle, I'm mad right now.
I think I've said this before, but Joy Lauren does a great job at being a character that is so unlikable.
Being a teen. She plays that bitchy teen so well.
Oh, yeah.
Do I not like Danielle.
I do not like Danielle. I am sure Joy Lauren is a fantastic person in real life.
Yes. One day I'll like Danielle. I'll still keep manifesting that. But yes. This week is not that week.
No, because Danielle threatens. She says, I'm going to start seeing my history teacher again.
Richard,
yeah. I thought it was...
Is it Richard? I feel like she calls him by his first name a bunch, and it makes me cringe every time.
Does. I wrote it down somewhere.
Robert.
Yeah.
It's Robert, not Richard. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. It's similar. Danielle threatens that, Danielle says, I'm going to start seeing Robert again. You can't stop us. And if you do, I'm going to leave and never come back. And it's going to be all your fault.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye, Danielle. Get out of here. The thing is, Bree doesn't want to lose her daughter. I think they have not really given us a lot of inclination that Bree gives a shit about Danielle until this episode. Mm-hmm. So the stakes feel weird to me. But she doesn't want to lose Danielle for some reason.
Yeah, it's almost as if she doesn't want to lose her just because she just doesn't want to lose her. Not for any other reason than that.
Not for actually caring about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the aspect of losing another child.
It's too much, yeah.
Yeah.
But we leave that scene for now and cut to Austin and Julie working on a paper about Othello. And you know what? When I read Shakespeare, I gotta just crack open a cold one with the boys
cold one. Julie does not like cracking open a cold one with the boys.
Julie is anti-cracking open a cold one with the boys. And Austin says, okay, I'll finish it, and drinks it in two sips.
Yeah.
The whole beer is gone in two sips.
Just a big gullet.
That man's gullet is large.
Julie,
do you like my large gullet?
Do you like my large gullet? You can stick your hand down there. Just your whole arm.
Your whole arm in this gullet, and you'll feel the whole beer that I drank in two sips. He opens up a bit.
He does open up a bit.
A little emotional vulnerability from Mr. Austin Britt. I don't know his name.
I was unsure if he was just manipulating her or if this was genuine.
I couldn't tell, and I'm worried I fell for it. Like Julie did.
Yeah, I literally, when the scene was over, I was like, was he just manipulating her into writing his paper? Because she says that she'll start his paper just so he can, like, get the juices flowing. And then he starts opening up about how his mom sent him to juvie for crashing a chair over an abusive boyfriend's head. And she chose her boyfriend over her son.
Julie, which is sad. Yeah. And it happens to a lot of kids, I think.
Yeah. And Julie then says, you know what, why don't you just go lie down? I'll write like a page or two. And when the way he just like goes to lie down and everything, that's when I was like, oh, was he just manipulating her? Or was he like genuinely trying to open up with her?
I immediately had that thought because I was loving this. Because I will not lie, I forgot to mention earlier, but when he made a kind of a comment about making out and like winked at her, I don't hate Austin and Julie. Like, I kind of like that this is like this like suave bad boy and she's like the staunch good girl and that maybe she can loosen up with him and he'll be better with her. And like, I like that. I like that kind of relationship trope. And so I was really into this. I was into him opening up. And then I also at the end was like, oh my God, did I also fall for it? Like, did I also fall for his fake vulnerability? I'm still on the fence because, and I'll go ahead and say it, but later at the end of the episode, Julie thinks that he was manipulating her. And only because Julie thinks so and he doesn't really say anything else, it makes me think that maybe he was being honest, but for manipulative purposes, but that is actually what happened to him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that.
I don't know if we have confirmation this episode, but I'm getting the impression that is the truth, but he was using it to manipulate.
Okay.
So it's like a mixture. That's my opinion, at least.
Okay.
But for now, we cut to Gabby at the house. Carlos comes in. And he confesses. He just wants to make Gabby jealous. And Gabby's like, cool. Oh, have you met Phil Lopez? The man who's beat you for Latino Businessman of the Year twice in a row?
That was funny.
It was so funny. I loved it. I did.
Because she was just like, oh, you hate me. And it's fine that you hate me. Because you would only do that if you hated me. Anyway...
Phil Lopez. Phil is handsome.
Yeah.
Date Phil Lopez, Gabby.
She doesn't want to.
I know, but still, I just want her to have another boyfriend so bad. I can't handle it. And Phil seems like a nice guy.
He seems like a nice guy.
And he is the Latino Businessman of the Year twice in a row.
And they're going to go in the hot tub together.
I mean, let's get into it. Gabby, date Phil Lopez challenge.
But that's all we get from that scene because then we cut to Tom. We find out that his realtor has found some really cool locations, but Lynette kind of comes in saying maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe he should start with catering first, because if he gets his foot in the door with catering, he can expand and then eventually create a business from the catering company. And he really doesn't want to do that. He wants to skip that step. He wants to go right to the pizza. And she says, you're going to fail if you do that. 90% of all businesses fail within the first year.
Yeah. I kind of agree with Lynette in this only because I think that her idea is a good compromise. Like, it's a decent business plan in terms of building out a... having a revenue stream that's consistent without too much risk at first, building an audience, a fan base, customers, a customer base, building that up so that when the restaurant launches, you already have like a ton of people who are gonna come consistently for that food. And then you also have this extra catering on the side with the business that you get to kind of build into the business. Like, I thought it was a really good compromise.
Yeah.
And especially when you're like this deep into a marriage with five kids, you really have to think these things through. And starting a restaurant is a huge, huge risk.
Yeah.
And I want Tom to follow his dreams, but I also think that Lynette presented a compromise that would make both of them happy, theoretically. So I was kind of on Lynette's side with this. How do you feel about it?
I think I am also on Lynette's side a bit. I understand where Tom is coming from, just being like, I just want to do what I love.
Do. Yeah.
And I don't want to take any of like the steps that I don't want to take to get there. I just want to get there. But yeah, like, we don't know how much he's been putting into this already and how much research he's been doing, because to know that, like, 90% of all businesses fail within the first year, to just, like, hope that you are in that 10% is not going to be enough unless you have a very strong business plan.
You got to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You got to achieve your dreams, but also when you have 5 children.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 co-parents that you're working with, you've got to be realistic about things.
Yeah.
He's a bit too much of a dreamer sometimes.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I did write down, he seems to have shaved and now I'm annoyed. It's like, Scruffy Tom is it? And then when he shaves a little bit, I'm like, no more.
It's because he's Business Tom now.
He's Business Tom now. He's Pizza Tom.
He's Pizza Tom. I did also write, though, in my notes, Tom, I guarantee that you will succeed in your business because I doubt that Fairview has a pizza place.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, I don't know. Fairview has a cowboy bar.
That's true.
Fairview has everything that the show needs at any given time. Mm-hmm. It just is a matter of when they tell us about it.
Yeah. And then we cut to a scene that gave me secondhand embarrassment.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's Gabby and Phil. They're in the bedroom. She's like, come on, we have to move the bed across to this wall. And then she just starts going, oh, Phil, yes, you should wear a saddle. Yes, Phil.
You should wear a saddle?
She says that.
I know, but for what reason? Like, cowgirl?
Because she's riding him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's riding that cowboy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, yes.
This, I know that, like, we joke around and I will make sex noises to make you laugh, but yes. For some reason this scene gave me secondhand embarrassment.
It was embarrassing because I...
Just, like, the way she was doing it, she was just like, yes, yes, yes.
Who sounds like that during sex?
I mean, Gabby does.
Apparently. I mean, yeah, Carlos didn't see anything weird about it, so maybe Gabby is just exclaiming with every thrust every time she has sex. The secondhand embarrassment for me, though, comes especially when Phil realizes he's not going to get laid. Carlos gets upset and goes outside so he doesn't have to hear the sex, which is bad news for Gabby because then Phil and Carlos run into each other, and Carlos pretty quickly is able to realize that Gabby is faking it. And calls her out on it. And I was embarrassed on her behalf.
Yes. And yeah, Carlos does exactly what you said. Calls her out on it. Says, see, you couldn't go through with it. You don't really want to hurt me. You must still like me.
Fuck off, Carlos.
But for now, let's cut to Julie.
Queen.
She is like doing something in the kitchen. Looks out the window. And storms outside to a car.
I assumed she, is it Sarah's? Because, like, why else would she go out to a random car?
I think so. It should be Sarah's.
Okay, because I was trying to justify why the fuck Julie would have just been, like, a car on a street.
With the windows fogged up?
Yeah, other than it maybe being Sarah's, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sarah and Austin are hooking up in the back of his car, or her car.
On Wisteria Lane. I love how he was like, nah, I gotta be home early because I got, so let's just stay here right in front of my house, please.
In the middle of the day with people walking around.
Was it night? I thought it was night.
Oh, I thought it was during the day. I thought it was light out.
Oh, I thought it was dark. Maybe, the jury is out.
Maybe we both need to get our eyes checked.
Yes. Either way, they're fooling around. And Sarah, I just had a thought. Impromptu lesbian of the episode. Julie, because she was not jealous that she was with Austin, quote unquote, but I'm just jealous that you blew me off for our movie plans.
I was thinking that. Yes.
Julie for lesbian of the episode for being heartbroken that Sarah blew her off for a boy.
Yes. Do you have any other noms?
No, I just had McCluskey and then Edie and the nurse, and then this is my impromptu one.
Do we want it? I like the aspect of giving it to Julie.
Julie hasn't gotten it yet.
No. Julie got it once in like
Oh yeah, cuz she was season 1. Danielle. Yeah.
Should we give it to her again?
Let's give it to Julie.
Hell
Julie
yeah.
For being jealous, not of Austin, but of Sarah abandoning her.
Sarah, why did you blow me off like that? I was really looking forward to going to the movies with you.
It's peak gay teen angst.
Yeah.
Oh, we love it. It's that Hayley Kiyoko music video or something. Like, that's what this is.
And then we get Julie storming back inside the house. Susan, there's a bit with Susan being like, I think I found out how to get Mike to remember. And then Julie goes, he's not into you. Get over it. And then goes upstairs. Projecting much, Julie?
Projecting?
Project much?
She's not that. I mean, he's not that into you. Oh, me knowing we'll never get gay, Julie. Please be gay, Julie.
And that's that scene.
And then some iconic behavior jumps out.
Oh, yeah.
From old Gabrielle Solis.
Yes.
Carlos is bringing Gabby breakfast in bed like she requested. And we now realize she requested it so that he would catch her in bed with a young guy who's very hot. And she's like, does this hurt you yet? Or do I need to keep doing it? And I screamed. I screamed so loud. This was so good. The iconic behavior
it
of this.
It jumped out. Oh, a power move. And she genuinely, like, she is not afraid to hurt him. Because even though, like,
I love it.
She still might have some feelings for him.
She's
ready to be gone. She's ready to be done with it. And, like, she just really needs to get it across to him. Because he is not understanding that she is done with him. And then we cut to Mike. He kicked ass in rehab yesterday. He's with Edie, and Edie gets a phone call. And then, can I just say,
what?
We get a return that I never thought we would get. We get the mysterious assassins.
Oh, I think that they were. I knew they looked familiar with the hat and the glasses.
And the glasses? We haven't seen them in so long.
I forgot about those ladies. What a great through line for seasons 1 through 3.
I was
to have
really,
these ladies around.
I was really worried and scared for Mike because I was like, if these women's because like we speculated that like maybe they're assassins.
Yeah.
I was worried for Mike's safety.
Because this woman, who is she?
Yeah.
Kidnaps Mike.
He thinks it's Susan, but I'm not too sure about that. I think Susan's got other stuff going on.
Yeah. But then when he goes outside the hospital, he does see Susan.
He does see Susan, and then she kidnaps him from the kidnapper.
Yeah, so maybe she was working with these ladies.
Oh, fuck. That's fucked up.
That's fucked up, Susan. can I tell you what I wrote?
Of course.
I wrote, Susan believes. With a bunch of dots. And then Susan believes I'm trying to defend you, queen. It's getting so hard Susan to defend her stupid behavior when she kidnaps people from hospitals.
I mean, she kidnaps him for love.
It was pretty cringy for me, though.
Yeah.
Just fully kidnapping a man.
Yeah.
That's kind of that scene.
That is kind of that scene. We see there's an orderly who comes out. Or like a nurse or no, it's a security guard.
Somebody comes out and she runs from them.
Yeah, she like tells the guy driving to floor it. And then we cut to Bree going to, is it Filaldi?
I just wrote Robert's house. Okay, I started using his first name because I could not remember his last name.
Okay. Then we cut to Bree going to Robert's house, and she's like, you know, I give you my blessing. Here's some of her things. I'll be around with the rest of them tomorrow. Because if you genuinely love her, you should be with her, Robert. You should be.
This was wild, yes, but kind of iconic behavior.
I absolutely loved it. She is not bullshitting around. She knows exactly how to get what she wants. Ooh. And you know, like it's not bad, because I do think like this is not a real relationship for Danielle to be in. We've talked about it before. This is statutory. And yeah, just like the way that Bree just like so effortlessly Listly.
You're flustered.
I'm so flustered. Went in there and just was able to like control the room.
It was hot.
It was hot. Lote nominee.
I was about to say, I literally was just thinking that as well. We already named Lote, but Lote for her being like, and don't involve me, because if you do, I'll call the police and I'll ruin your whole life. And I was like, yes, bitch, it's what he deserves. He's a gross piece of shit who's sleeping with an underage girl, and it's what he deserves.
And, you know, he agrees. He'll break things off with Danielle and he'll leave her out of it.
Hell yes.
Let's cut back to Susan and Mike taking a stroll down the lane.
The memory lane.
The memory lane. The memes lane.
The memes lane. Thanks for the memes. He's not having it.
No, he does not care. He really doesn't. There is a moment where she trips over the sidewalk and he laughs and he remembers.
It was cute. It was cute.
Yeah. He remembers that she's kind of a klutz.
It was a sweet moment, and it was funny because she was excited, and I think that's cute that the klutziness is what would trigger, like, I think that her klutziness and her silliness is a reason why Mike pre-coma is charmed by her, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think he thinks she's goofy, and that is charming to him, and he brings up Ian, because I think that the big discomfort with Susan has been the idea that they were dating and then she ran off with another man while he was in a coma. And he kind of finally admits that to her, being like, what about this British guy? Like, what's going on with him? And Susan tries to implore that, like, she thought Mike would never wake up and she needed somebody to be with her, but I don't know, Mike just is really upset about it.
Yeah,
poor Mikey Poo. Will Moosin ever come back?
They will. I told you they're gonna get back together at some point, get married, have a kid, and then Mike's gonna die or something.
You're not very optimistic about Moosin.
I just think there's drama. I think there's drama. But I think everybody's gonna... I was talking to you the other day off mic about how I think it would be really interesting if somebody got murdered, and how I think if somebody did, it would have to be Edie, because they would never kill off a real housewife.
I will kill Mark Cherry if Edie dies. That is my personal vendetta.
If Edie dies, I will be so sad.
I will fight Mark Cherry with my fists if Edie dies.
Season five, Edie dies.
Oh, don't say that. Don't this show has been out for 10 years. Ned, don't manifest that. But hey, you want to know something good about Edie?
Of course.
She looks so fucking hot in this scene. This white tank top. Oh, I forgot to say Edie shows up. And she looks hot. This white tank top and those shorts with pockets.
Yeah.
Her hands in her pockets. Low nominee for having her hands in her pockets. She looked so hot. And I want to say, I do not endorse Edie's methods of lying and gaslighting and looking at people's genitalia while they are in comas. I do not agree with the methods, but I also don't disagree with Susan, with Edie calling Susan out a bit. Being like, okay, why do you just think of me as evil? Like, why do you think I'm an evil person who doesn't deserve to have love? Like, what, like, just the idea that Susan postures herself as the good guy and Edie as the evil guy, which is what the show does. But that Edie is a person with wants and needs and a full life, and isn't necessarily all evil, much as Susan is not all good. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I liked Edie calling Susan out a bit, but I don't agree with Edie's methods for getting Mike. So it's
I was going to say, I think I would agree with her more if it wasn't surrounded by the context that it was.
Yeah, of her like lying and yeah, being kind of gross with Mike's head.
Mm-hmm. And that's that scene. We then cut back to the cops. We find out that they were able to decipher the phone number, and Detective Ridley's going to do the honor of punching in that number, go straight to voicemail. And who is it? Is it? It's gotta be Justin, right?
Yes. It's Justin's, lawn service. Gay lawn service.
Gay lawns. Twinks. For grass.
Twinks for grass. Justin's lawn service.
Yes.
We make a Twinks for Grass shirt.
Yes. No, we find out that it's Orson. Right? Who is it?
It's Mike.
It's Mike. I missed that. I thought it was Orson. I just heard a man's voice and I went, it's probably
Orson.
Yeah,
it said you've reached Mike Delfino's plumbing. I'll give you a call back. Leave a message and I'll give you a call back. So it's Mike's number, not Orson's.
Wild.
Because if it was Orson's, that mystery would be too easy.
That would be too easy. But Mike is interconnected into this mystery.
He is, because Orson recognized him. And Orson recognized the dead body as a woman named Monique, but did not tell the cops that. So now Monique is connected to Mike. Why is Mike's number written on Monique's dead hand?
I'm so confused.
You got any predictions about this mystery so far?
I feel like I went too far with the twins. The faking of death.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
things
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. I, because my original prediction was that, like, Orson's wife faked her death or something.
Okay.
And, like, so, and then he got, like, put in jail for it or something. I have no idea right now. I'll formulate. I'll think on it. What?
I'm just thinking about how, I mean, maybe ink, just if it's a Sharpie, maybe stays on for a long time. I'm trying to think of how recent that would have had to be for the ink to still be moderately readable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's another
thing. She was buried in clay.
Yeah.
That's got to do something.
Maybe. Who knows? But that's, I am ready. I want more of this mystery. I feel like they're being a little, they're just peppering it in, and I want a little bit more, you know? Because it's a balance, right? Because last season they gave us everything too quickly, and now I'm like, oh, I'm hankering for more. But I guess I'd rather be wanting more than having too much.
Yeah, that's how I would want it to be. And then we cut to Julie and Austin again. We find out that Julie sent him the wrong quote paper. Yes. Oh no. Because she was angry with him.
Yeah.
And then,
because he stole her girlfriend, yeah, Sarah. So.
Yeah. But then he interprets it as her being jealous.
Of him, because he has Sarah.
Of him. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So oops. Sarah is the Desdemona in this situation.
Yes. So I guess he does rightfully call her out on being jealous.
Yeah, because this is the gay narrative.
And that's essentially that scene.
Yes.
Because then we cut to a wild scene.
Wild, wild, wild.
Danielle being like, yeah, Robert broke up with me. So then I got him fired from the school. And then I recorded him yelling at me. And I sent it to his wife. So he's not getting anything in the divorce.
I love that.
I love how she went through all of the stages. She's like, okay, I'm going to ruin your already failed marriage. You're already crumbling marriage.
I loved it, and I weirdly loved the moment of Brie being like, I wonder where she gets it from, with a knowing smile. Because honestly, it seems like she was proud of Danielle for being this conniving, and I was like, oh, fuck. I now can see the resemblance between Brie and Danielle, and I kind of am living for it a little bit. I kind of loved it, and I want them to do this more. I want us to see Brie and Danielle maybe chill out a little bit, and Brie and Danielle to find more things in common, just like how Brie and Brie and Andrew are finding things in common. Like, I want to see both of those relationships get better, and I kind of loved that moment with Brie, weirdly.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Nora and Tom.
Oof.
This scene. Nora is a little schemer.
She's a scammer.
Telling Tom that she loves his pizza parlor idea. That, like, she can tell Lynette's not super into it. But she thinks that he should just go for it.
And she ensures him that she believes in him. Mm-hmm. And that Lynette's just a bully. This bitch, she's pulling some strings. But also, I kind of love this. Like, I love how she's complicating this. Like, they're making her a little bit more sneaky with her underhanded bullshit. And I'm interested in this. I'm, like, very interested in what they're going to do with Nora. Like, I kind of love this, weirdly.
Yeah, because she's not being as like you just said, like, she's being sneaky. She's not being super overt about, like, wanting to be a part of their family or wanting something more from them.
She's getting smarter about it.
And you know, like, we talked about before how, like, I was like, I think that she's going to try to, like, worm her way into getting Tom.
Yes.
And that's what she's trying to do.
That's what she's trying to do. Because we get our final Mary Alice monologue.
Sabotage. Everyone is capable of it. But some go about it more ruthlessly than others. Like the ones who crave vengeance.
We see Danielle craving vengeance.
Or the ones who hunger for love.
Edie hungering for love.
Or the ones who are determined to burn bridges.
Gabby burning bridges.
And then there are those who simply want something.
Wish Daddy lived here so he could tuck me in too.
Something that belongs to someone else.
I'm working on it, Piglet. Mama's working on it.
God.
Oof! Oof size could not be bigger right now. Oofa doofa.
Oofa doofa.
Oofa doofa with a loofah, you know?
And that's our episode.
Oh, that was a fun episode.
Oh, I had so much fun.
I like it. Like, I think that it's not my favorite of the season, but it's still a strong episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, season 3 is rocking my ass right now.
Hell yeah.
I truly am loving season 3 so much.
Oh, so am I. It's so much better than 2.
It's, the improvement is so vast, I cannot believe it. And we have been Wisteria Gaze. Surprise, surprise. Did you forget? That's who we are.
Oh.
We're Wisteria Gaze. You can find us on Twitter at Wisteria Gaze or on Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _, as well as our website, WisteriaGaze.com.
And on our website, you can find links to our Discord, which is really great. We have a really cool community there.
Come hang out.
You can find a link to our merch page, where we have some really cool designs, like a Fairview High Abstinence Club shirt. And you can find a link to our Patreon.
Ooh.
Our Patreon is great. It helps support us. It helps support the show. And if you sub to our Patreon, you get some really cool add-ons like ad-free episodes, episode notes, and shout-outs. So we want to take the next minute to shout out our patrons. So thank you, AJ.
Annie.
Cheryl.
Elise.
Helena.
Liv.
Lydia.
Nadia.
Sarah.
Tom.
And TK.
You all are so amazing. Thank you so much for your support.
Yeah, thank you so much. You mean the world to us.
You mean the absolute world.
So if you want to sub to our Patreon, you can go to our website or patreon.com/WisteriaGaze. You know what I love?
Tell me.
Okay, God, I love reviews.
Oh, good. Me too.
Yeah, I know, because they help. They make our day, you know?
They do.
And they help people find the podcast, believe it or not.
They do.
At the end of every episode, we like posing a question just to get those review juices flowing. And they're never mandatory. They're just for fun. We mostly like answering them. And this week, I think the question should be, where do you take Mike on your Wisteria Lane field trip?
To jog his memory?
Yeah.
I take Mike... Do you, I don't know if this is only in Nashville. You know the restaurant Aquarium?
Nope.
It's in Nashville in the Grand Ole Opry, and it is literally a restaurant that is just a giant aquarium. So you sit with fish and eat seafood.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I would take Mike there because that's where we had our first date. And what happened was, a la It's a Wonderful Life, I was like, you want that catfish? I'll go in there right now, Mikey Poo. I'll grab that catfish for you. And I leapt into the aquarium, in the restaurant aquarium. And I wrestled with a large catfish to bring it to Mike's table for him to eat for dinner. And he laughed.
Beautiful.
He laughed and I laughed. And it was the beginning of a beautiful friendship. And so I would bring him to the aquarium and I would leap into the water again to try to jog his memory.
Okay. I like that. That's very sweet.
Yeah. Where would you take Mike to jog his memory of your relationship?
I dug a hole in my backyard.
Okay.
I would take him to the hole.
The hole, okay.
I would make him go inside of it.
Okay.
And then I'd cover him up.
You.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you going to kill Mike?
I'm turning. I'm turning evil.
Are you going to kill Mike?
I'm killing Mike Delfino because he knows too much.
Oh, no.
I'm helping Orson.
Oh, my God.
I can't. See, I would take him to the hole in my backyard.
Oh, my gosh. That's wild. What a complicated tale you've just woven for me.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else, when you leave us a review, if you'd like, you can let us know where you would take Mike Delfino to jog his memory.
Other than that, you can find me, Ned, on any social media at Ned Jorts.
And me, Mackenzie, at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Mackenzie.
Ned?
There's something behind you.
Me can see myself in the camera. Also, me was immediately terrified.
It's a message saying I love you.
Oh my God, I see it.
I'm so sorry I spooked you.
It's okay.
I do love you.
Hey, you know what? I love you too.
Thank God. Everyone else out there, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.